Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. Or as I went by earlier for a few minutes this evening, Eton Smith. when I was trying to change my name to protect the innocent and the rest of the CTV staff, but they're not that innocent, so I changed it back. I'm here with Eli Kim and Chris Francis. We got a 50%. This podcast is 50% Korean and 100% awesome. So I'm super hyped to have my boys on. And oh my God, Evan Mobley, come on.
Beat down.
Yes. Evan Mobley, I mean.
Generational talent.
I mean, do you feel like the Cavs just like fell into fudging Bill Russell?
A modern day Bill Russell. It's possible. It's very possible.
I mean, the guy, the blocks tonight were just unbelievable.
He took Zach LaVine's soul tonight. He really did.
He did. I am convinced that Evan Mobley's mother was bitten by a vampire when she was pregnant with him, and he is half vampire, just like Blade. And, you know, JB Bickerstaff makes the weapons, and Evan Mobley just uses them, just like Blade. So, I mean, it was awesome. Just unbelievable tonight. I mean, he was Russell-esque. Like, just the blocks straight to teammates. Like, not the, I'm going to Dwight Howard this crap into the 15th row. No, I'm going to tip this to a teammate because I can. You know, and it's just like, it was unbelievable. The guy is, when is the last time we've seen this player? Like, somebody tell me.
Well,
like, what's the most recent comp?
Did you see the stat that they posted tonight on Twitter? He's the first Cavs rookie to record 5 blocks since LeBron James.
Yeah, and I'm gonna bet that he eclipses that before the end of the season.
That's hard to bet against.
I mean, just, you're right. He took Zach LaVine's soul. Like Steven Dorff. That's a Blade One reference.
Well, and I know you missed the first half, but in the very opening of the game, they literally just dumped it down to Evan Mobley, and he scored like 9 straight points to open the game.
I watched.
Oh, okay, you saw that. Okay.
Yeah, I was on the phone for most of it, but I mean, he was incredible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just he's trending on Twitter nationally tonight. So that's how good of a game it was. It was just ridiculous.
The Cavs literally got the third pick and won the lottery. We got to look at the last few NBA drafts. And like I've said to people, this guy is Kevin Durant, LeBron James. Like, who else is in that list of how good he looks as a rookie?
Maybe Luka?
Yeah, Luka. That's the list. I mean, even Anthony Davis, I don't feel like he looked this good as a rookie. Maybe he did, I don't know. But he's also a douche. So.
Nate, you're on fire. It is awesome. This is amazing. This is gonna be rare. This is rare.
Rare. Like you just threw me on the grill and seared each side, and and now, I'm rich and rare. I'm like Canadian Miss Whiskey. So, anyway, I mean, what a performance from Evan Mobley. Let's talk about it. We've got 16 points, 8 of 11 shooting. Like, honestly, they should have given the freaking guy the ball more. Agreed. 9 rebounds. Agreed. And let's talk about 31 minutes, 35 seconds, and plus 28 in that time. And that ain't BS either. Like, he earned every bit of that plus 28. He was ridiculous. 2 steals, an assist, and 1 turnover and 1 personal foul to go with 5 blocks. Like, say all you want about, you know, our old center, Hard Rock Hartenstein. I mean, this guy, 5 blocks with 1 foul. What is that? That's just insane. It's just ridiculous. Like, what are we doing here? And, Jared Allen, Mr. Dunk Machine, 13 points, 12 rebounds, 5 and 9, just putting guys in the spin cycle in the fourth quarter. Like, he was, oh my God, this team's incredible. And somebody shut me the F up. Eli, what did you think of this game?
I mean, it was a beautiful game from start to finish. Started with Mobley, and then, honestly, Darius Garland has looked amazing, I think. In the last 5-6 games, he's been unstoppable. And
you ain't lying, my friend.
And I gotta be honest. I was not a big Lauri Markkanen fan. I thought maybe, you know, he'd be way too slow, not shifty enough to play defense. But it just works, man. It somehow works. And he even, like, you know, there are moments where he frustrated Levine. And it's kind of, it seems counterintuitive to put this, like, you know, 7-footer dude's not the shiftiest, but he's just so damn long, and defenses are scared to try to drive to the hoop when you got Mobley and Allen just waiting right behind him, no matter who you got. So,
you know, and the closeouts, like those closeouts. Yeah. When they close out on guys, it's a little bit scary, like, especially because the fake and flail is a thing of the past now.
Yeah, and to add to that, too, like, whenever you switch, it's like, oh, I want to switch from Mobley, and then who are you going to get? You're going to get Markkanen or you're going to get Allen, who are just as tall. And obviously, they aren't as talented defensively on the perimeter, but it's just a really tough look to get inside and even, you know, kick out to open 3-point shooters when you got a 7-footer jumping out at you on a
open 3. The wingspan is like, oh my God, did you see that steal that Evan Mobley had in like the late third quarter where he just consumed the ball? Like, he just, like, have you ever seen the movie, God, what's that movie with Natalie Portman and I'm drawing a blank here, so just ignore me. Keep going.
I mean, to piggyback of what Eli was saying, what was interesting about the game is that it was a total team effort. There was guys who stepped up all throughout the game. There was Love's 3 barrage in the third quarter. There was Rubio getting timely buckets. It was Lauri Markkanen's show there for a little bit. It was the Jared Allen show in the fourth quarter. It was Darius Garland, coming up with the big time threes to close the game out. So it was just an amazing total team effort. And the way they took care of business, I mean, they were favored in the game, which was rare. You know, they've been rarely favored in any of the games this season. They were favored in this game, and they just came out, took care of business, and kicked some butt. You know, it was just something that really good teams do, is they take care of business against good teams. And it was just a total and they dominated both sides of the ball. I mean, Vucevic was in prison. You know, go ahead.
And, I was just going to say, and my brother would say, business. B-I-D-N-I-S-S, business. They took care of business. You know, when you pass go in Monopoly and you get to frickin' Vermont Avenue and it's the last frickin' property you got to get all the blues, like, they took care of business. That's what the Cavs did tonight.
100%.
Anyway, sorry. I'm gushing over this team. They're phenomenal. It's just,
yeah. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and you got guys like Lamar Stevens. You got Ricky Rubio. Like, Lamar Stevens just played under 5 minutes. Even the garbage time squad looked fun and engaged. You know, 5 minutes of Kevin Pangos, Dylan Windler, Lamar Stevens, Dean Wade, and Denzel Valentine. Like, Dean Wade, how about 5 minutes of garbage time, 9 points, like 3 or 4 from deep? What is that? Like, you got to love when even garbage time is awesome. Like, so good. And, and Chetty Osman. Like, Chetty Osman playing 22 minutes. Everybody on the live thread, like, Chetty Osman needs more minutes, but the guy, 2 or 3 from three, just easy 6 points, +8 on the game. Oh, yeah, and 3 steals, 5 stocks in 22 minutes. Like, just let's just chase ruminate down Chetty, on baby. That. Chase down Chetty. Like, chase you down take Chetty. Taking pointers from LeBron and all those guys in that. Remember the picture of him and all those small forwards? That's and right. Who was Dwayne? Was it Dwayne Casey? Was the coach that they were all training with? Like, man, that guy's a bench. So good. So good.
He's in rarefied air. I mean, KD, LeBron, Chetty. That's all you need, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And Jay Buckets, maybe. I mean, that's about that's it. Right. Yeah. I mean, God, this team is good. And Isaac Okoro, I thought, played a great game tonight. Just a lot of really heady plays, like 9 points, 4 or 7 from the field, 4 rebounds, +16. Like, didn't do too much, but didn't do not enough as he often has in the past. Like, he was just ridiculous. And
he was really doing the little things tonight. You know, he was rebounding. You know, he was rebounding, hustling, diving on the floor, and also. An interesting wrinkle tonight with Okoro was letting him run the point a little bit to give some plays off to DG early in the game, you know, kind of let him rest on the court, you know, and also kind of minimize the negative impact Okoro can have on the offensive side. So I thought that was a nice adjustment by JB to get him on the ball a little bit more. Also, him in transition, those transition finishes by Okoro tonight.
Oh, they were filthy. Yeah, he had one where he went 1-on-3, I felt like.
Yeah, I think that was the and one, too. He might have gotten an and one from that, too.
Yeah, I mean, he was really good. Like, everybody forgets the dude is not even 21 yet. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just.
He's young.
Like, people, like, oh, well, of course not. The dude is not even 21 yet. Come on. What are we talking about here? Okay, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs a Podcast. Okay, Chris, Eli, I got to tell you, I want to carry JB Bickerstaff's baby. I'm in love with the dude. The dude is, like, you remember how much we criticized in the last 2 years, year and a half, you know, after the John Beilein disaster? Like, the dude, like, his post-game press conferences, like, how can you not root for this guy? He is all about his players. Like, it's all about everybody buying in and the team culture. And, you know, it's not about his ego. it's just all about the team and, you know, building the guys up that play for him. And, like, how can you not love the dude? And I kind of want to marry him. I'm just saying, like, you know, Christina Smith, you know, I might have to leave you for JB Bickerstaff. I'm just saying. So, I mean, what did you see coaching wise tonight, Eli, that you loved?
Oh, I mean, I really liked how he, I feel like lately he's been staggering Rubio and DG a lot more. Obviously, I think they play well together fine, but just look at the number of assists they put together. Those two combined for 15 tonight. And, you know, both of them get their opportunities to shoot and play off each other as well, but they also, you know, get in the rhythm and get their chance to operate the team on their own. So I really like that adjustment. And I got, you know, JB Bickerstaff is playing to win. I mean, it's an 8-man rotation, maybe 9, but he is not pulling any punches, and he's trying to win every game. And I commend that effort, especially in today's era of, you know, rest days. Look at the Nets. The Nets thought that they could just roll into Houston tonight without KD, and they're going to lose tonight. So, I mean, JB, he's interesting because he's a younger guy, but he plays. He has that old school mentality, probably because his dad's been within the association for so long. But you know, I really liked what he has been doing in terms of, you know, staggering those guys, letting K-Love play through some, you know, tough defensive sequences to, you know, make 3 threes in a quarter, stuff like that. I think he is really letting the players play, and he definitely has their attention, and they're all motivated to play hard for this guy.
Yeah, I definitely feel like he has the team's respect, and that's hard to do, and especially when you've lost for the last season and a half. I mean, it's just the guy just puts people in a position to succeed. And you know how, like, we always used to complain about the baseline out of bounds plays and the sideline out of bounds plays, and just, I feel like, or the challenges last year, I feel like just, like, slowly some of those complaints are going away. Like, he's progressing along with his players. Like, the things that we had complaints about are fading away. And I don't know if you saw the tweet, you know, a day or two ago, around, you know, the improvement from last season to this season of the Cavs and the Warriors. And as I said, you know, in responding to that tweet, not tanking is a hell of a drug. You know what I mean? Like, it's so nice to not be tanking anymore. Chris, what did you see tonight from JB Bickerstaff that you liked or didn't like?
Yeah, well, I mean, the adjustment to, I mentioned the adjustment to put Okoro on ball was, I think, a positive adjustment. I think that's definitely a way to kind of neutralize Okoro's deficiencies on the offensive end. I was critical on the live thread about the 8-man rotation, and specifically what was happening in the game was that Chicago was just packing the paint. Whenever Okoro and Allen were on the floor, it was just Chicago didn't even bother to guard Okoro. Also, they had cross-matched Okoro with Vucevic for a lot of the game.
Similarly to the way Utah did it with Rudy Gobert being primarily assigned on Okoro.
Yep, that's an excellent point. And actually, what was a great adjustment by Bickerstaff was that cross match was actually one of the results of the cross match was actually how Mobley started going off, was that Mobley had a smaller guy on him as a result. And so that cross match, they were just mining that cross match with Mobley in the first quarter, which I thought was a great adjustment. Also, there was a great timeout that JB had in the second quarter that really, in my opinion, saved the game, because it was they had pushed the lead out to double digits. They had lost the lead, getting goofy in the second quarter, and JB calls a timeout. Clearly, the message after the timeout was feed the bigs, feed Mobley, feed Allen. We need to keep on going to the bigs because Chicago was small. I mean, Chicago plays small, and they like to go small in their reserve lineups, and they were also missing players as well. And so, so going to the bigs, adjusting to the bigs, really kind of helped get the momentum turning in the second quarter. In a general thing I'll say about JB, and it's kind of piggybacking off what you guys are saying, which I think is a great point, is that he's the ultimate player's coach. Like, you listen to his interviews, you listen to his comments, you know, every single moment that there is, that he, when he's talking about his players, it's nothing but positivity. He's never saying anything negative about his players. He's never going to put his players publicly on blast. He's always going to keep it in the locker room as far as anything that needs to be addressed. And you can't help. I mean, that's why these guys look like they're going to run through a brick wall for him, is because they know that the coach has their back. The coach is not going to leave them out to dry to the public. And that's got to be an extremely comforting feeling, especially for a roster as young as this.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's so interesting the way that the Cavs, and it's not just that they're running through a brick wall for JB, they're running through a brick wall for each other. Like, the Cavs this year are playing for each other so much. You know, it doesn't ever feel like there's anybody on this team that's like, I got to get mine, I got to get my touches. Like, Jared Allen, if he, like, had said, hey, frickin' feed me, he probably could have had 28 points tonight. If, you know, Evan Mobley had said, hey, feed me, I'm hot, he could have had 30 points tonight. You know, Darius Garland took the shots that were there, didn't turn the ball over, is only 2 turnovers, 6 assists, and 24 points tonight. Like, they're just, not even Ricky Rubio, because he's a very selfless player normally. Like, Rubio, 11 points, 9 assists. Like, he's always doing that. Like, it's just about what do we got to do in the moment to win. And I want to carry this team's baby. Like, it's just like, you know, sign me up for, yeah, I just better shut up now. I'm in love with this team. They're so much fun. Like, this is the most fun team since 2016. Am I wrong, guys?
Oh, it's, I don't know. I mean, like, back then there was the weight of expectations. You know what I mean? It's weird because, you know, you had LeBron, it was a ticking, you know, there was a ticking clock to get a championship. With this team, it's like we're seeing the beginning of something very special that's going to last, you know, Lord willing, you know, for a very long time. And
the creeks don't rise.
That's right.
That's the fact, too. Like, how fun is this team? Like, there's nothing like getting a team on the come up. You know what I mean? It's so fun. I'm just a player looking for a come up, in the words of Macklemore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And one thing I'll say is, to your point about Rubio and Garland, is I feel like they're really setting the tone for the team because of their unselfishness, and Mobley as well. I mean, it's just trickling, and it's an infectious thing about how unselfish this team is. And I feel like Rubio was an essential part of bringing that mentality to the team, and everybody's benefiting. Mobley seems to be that kind of guy. It's just the character on this team is off the charts in terms of basketball unselfishness.
Ricky, don't lose that number. It's the only one you own. You might use it if you feel better.
I don't know the next line, but something like, when you get
that was good. I was impressed.
Yeah, that was a little Steely Dan for you. I've always been throwing out those memes of the Steely Dan, Ricky, don't lose that number. But man, that guy is so much fun. I hope he is a Cav for a couple more years at the very least. Like
rest of his career.
I feel like he's such a catalyst. I mean, like here's the thing I love about Ricky Rubio. Like the guy has terrible shooting percentages from the floor. Like, come on, let's pull those up. They're sub 40%. And yet he is such a positive factor. You know, part of the thing is the guy's not afraid to take the shot. Like a little bit, teams are afraid of him because he's not afraid of missing. And you need guys like that on your team. Like his willingness to shoot the three and just live with the misses has been so needed by this team. And the same thing with just, you know, going one-on-one. If he doesn't get a layup, if he misses that, you know, running one-handed scoop shot that he takes with both freaking hands, he's like, whatever, that's a good shot. I may not be shooting the highest percentage, but it's still a good shot.
Yeah, Rubio he's only shooting 36% from the field, but he is still shooting almost 35% from three. So can't be that upset with him from deep for sure.
And in the words of David Wood, he is a very high variance player. Like, I feel like Rubio in wins versus Rubio in losses, like, you can live. It feels like the losses, like, they were probably going to lose him anyway, but he's good in wins. And in the losses, like, okay, he missed. They didn't shoot that well, but they were the right shots, you know. But they were probably going to lose that game anyway. And a little bit of that is, like, going back to the last two games, the Milwaukee game and the Jazz game. And I just thought the Cavs played phenomenal in both those games. Given, you know, the Jazz game, I thought was one of the best games the Cavs played all year, even though they lost at the end. And the Milwaukee game, I was like, I can't believe they're in this game, despite the fact that they're on the second night of a back-to-back against one of the best teams in the West and literally the defending freaking NBA championship or the defending NBA champions with Giannis Antetokounmpo looking like a modern day, like Jordan had a baby with Dr. J, like hitting freaking pull-up threes looking like Ray Allen out there. Like, what is that? Like, the fact that the Cavs are only in that down 10 at the end, like they just played their butts off despite the bad shooting from everybody. Like if there was ever a schedule loss, it was that Milwaukee game. Somebody jump in. I'm out of breath.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, because that Milwaukee team, surprisingly, they haven't been that healthy this year. Their big three of Middleton, Giannis and Drew have only played 11 games, in which they are 11-0 now. So really tough opponent for the Cavs to not only get them on a back-to-back, but also have to travel to Milwaukee after playing at home the night before. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, we could chalk it up as a schedule loss, but they could have packed it in and no one would probably bat an eye, but they didn't. They fought. They kept it within, I think, two at one point in the fourth quarter. So, you know.
Yeah, they were really close.
And the other thing is Giannis has never lost on his birthday. So the Cavs came pretty close. But it was a very good game, very entertaining. And, yeah, Giannis is quietly being somehow even gotten a lot better. He's much more in control, I feel like. And, you know, I think the Bucks are kind of the sneaky team again. They're just slowly creeping up the standings and dominating again. And them and the Jazz, I mean, the Jazz are also the same boat. They're the third team in the West, quietly behind the Warriors and Suns, who just lost, you know, after winning so many games in a row. So it's going to be interesting. I think there's just not a lot of parity right now. Or I guess in a way there is a lot of parity, but the cream of the crop is really ahead of the pack, especially in the West right now.
Yeah, and that Milwaukee game, I mean, let's go back and, you know, dig into the box score a little bit. Cavs, five guys in double figures. Jared Allen with another monster game with 25 and 9, two blocks. You got Lauri Markkanen, being the Big Finish, which might be the greatest nickname I've ever come up with. I'm just going to toot my own horn here. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists. Then you got Kevin Love off the bench, 19 minutes, 15 points. Like, they played really well, but the problem was the Bucks just left Isaac Okoro wide open, and the dude couldn't make a shot. Minus 20, 0-6 from the field. I love the fact that the Cavs went right the frick back to him tonight. But, you saw Darius Garland 3-12. It's hard to overcome that. It very much felt like a make-or-miss loss by the Cavs. So, and you live with those. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're, 100% correct. I think in that Milwaukee game, they had, I think they out-assisted the Bucks 27-21 in that game and still shot only 37%. So, I mean, they were passing the ball really well. The ball was moving. The ball was finding the open guy. They just couldn't hit a damn thing. So,
and you'll get that on a back-to-back with a travel.
Exactly. I mean, it was totally.
The Cavs are on a 5-game and 7-night schedule this week, which is insanity. And they're 1-2 so far. So I'll live with that. And it was, not that I wish for anybody to be injured, but it was nice to see, the injury report gods give a little parody to the Cavs tonight when, had DeMar DeRozan. Who else was out tonight?
Caruso.
And
Javonte Green was a starter.
Javonte Green, yeah. Yeah, and Javonte Green, another guy I wish the Cavs had gone on after in the offseason. What a steal for the Bulls he's been. But, yeah, I mean – It was nice to see the Cavs little injury karma. Hopefully none of those guys are out for too long. But it was super fun. And with that, we will be right back. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. I jumped the gun on the intro. I did 3-2 and then I did right in. So I really came in at 1 instead of 0, but that may be the Market Garden Festivus holiday ale in front of me that is contributing to my gun jumping. But it's been a fun week of the Cavs, and we talked about the Bucks game, but which the Cavs lost 104-112. But I kind of want to go back to one of my favorite games of the season, which was the Jazz game, which honestly I thought, even though the Cavs lost, was just one of the best played games of the season I saw from both teams from the very tip. The Cavs lost 109-108 to one of the best teams in the West. And, both teams played at a super high level, I thought. The Cavs forced 17 turnovers while only giving up 13. They went 14 of 38 from three, whereas the Jazz went 20 of 48, and in a way it was really make or miss, but it was just a really, really, really well-played game by both teams. We saw monster game from Darius Garland, 31 points. Was that a career high? I don't remember. Anybody
almost
know?
He had 37, yeah. I think, against the Spurs last year.
Nice. And that is why I keep you around. It's not just for your good looks, Chris Francis.
Thank you, kind sir.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. 31 points, 5 assists, 5 stocks, which means 4 steals and a block by Darius Garland, 5 of 8 from the field. I mean, the guy looked literally Curry-esque, if you will, against the Jazz.
Went toe-to-toe with Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, I mean, that game I felt like was played at such a high level by the Cavs. And honestly, if Kevin Love doesn't, put up a 3-point, stinker in Cleveland, the Cavs probably take that game. I mean, it was just so well played. Do you remember that game at all, Eli? Did you get to watch that one?
Yeah, I did. It was a very good game. I think that, I got to be honest, I thought Jared Allen played out of his mind, and it just I felt a little bad because I think Gobert got the better end of him at the very end, but because of his team won. But I really think Gobert is a player that Jared Allen could try to emulate, and watching them just continue to battle all day was really encouraging. You know, at the end of the day, it's still a loss, but really encouraging to see Jared Allen kind of get the confidence of going against probably one of the best defenders in the league. And, you know, hopefully that can continue to translate for the Cavs the rest of the way. But I thought it was a great game. You know, the Jazz are one of the top teams in the league for a reason. They're extremely well coached and they make good adjustments. They found a way to adjust and just get, you know, just
do just enough to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, you know, that game was one of my only kind of quibbles with JB Bickerstaff's coaching is, you know, coming down the stretch last possession, you know, about 17 seconds or so left. The Cavs had a 5-on-4 because Donovan Mitchell had fallen on the baseline after a drive and missed the shot. And, you know, Rubio was looking at Bickerstaff, and Bickerstaff said, "Hey, I'm going to take a timeout," instead of, and then of course Darius Garland was alone at the top of the key. And it's like, you know, that was my one quibble about the whole game is like, you got to be aware of the situation. You got to trust your team to go, go, go. And I felt like that was a little bit of a mistake. And then the Cavs had like four shots at the end between offensive rebounds to try and, you know, get a bucket to go over the Jazz, and they just couldn't hit one. And, you know, you live with that, but it was a little bit frustrating that they gave up the power play advantage, the 5-on-4, when they had it. Have you heard anything about that, Eli, or any, did JB make any comments about that after the game or anything?
Yeah, I actually did not. But, yeah, I imagine that a lot of people were upset, but it's hard to realize that kind of in the moment, right? You have 18 seconds and you're like, oh, we got to call timeout and try to get the best shot possible. And, you know, the Cavs scored, 108 points against a Jazz defense. That's really good. So I think they felt pretty confident in their plan. But understandably, a 5-on-4 is pretty hard to beat, but I did not hear anything in particular from JV on that.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I did not hear anything as well. The thing that stood out about the game for me was just how the Cavs were able to go to another level in that fourth quarter. I mean, they were, you know, they were doing just enough to stay in the game through the first three quarters. And then there was another level that they reached in that fourth quarter. They won that quarter 26-18. So that the defense just all of a sudden locked down in that fourth quarter, and they found another level to you know, and elevated their game against an opponent. I would say the Jazz are probably one of they have to be one of the teams that has the most continuity on their roster. And just in their organization.
And I was just about to say their coaching staff. And, you know, I 100% agree with you. I thought the Cavs looked like, dare I say it, a playoff team. Like,
it's not even a question, is it? Is that even a question?
Well, it's always a question. You know, until it happens.
True.
But they did. That game felt like a playoff level intensity, execution, adjustments by both teams, just really, really, really played at a very high level, it felt like to me. And it was the best I thought I've seen the Cavs play since, you know, shades of 2017, when, you know, LeBron pretty much carried the Cavs on his back to the NBA Finals. Or no, I guess that was 2018. He carried him on his back to the NBA Finals. And then 2017 was the last year of Kyrie. But yeah, I thought it was just really one of the best played regular season Cavs games I've seen in a long time. You know, and again, the Cavs, five guys in double figures. Chetty Osman, another monster game. I mean, at this point, like, do you roll the dice and give Chetty more minutes? Because, man, it feels like he deserves them. Am I wrong here, guys?
I mean, I 100%, I said that tonight. I 100% agree with you, Nate. I think you got to trust your guys. You got to trust the work they put in. It's obvious that Chetty went to the lab this offseason, really worked on his mental game, I think was the main thing, honestly. And he's come out and he's been consistent all the way through this season. And I feel like you got to reward guys for the work they put in. It comes at the and I get that it comes at the expense of Okoro, which, you know, I get why that might be controversial, but I feel like that could be beneficial ultimately for the team and for both guys, quite frankly. You know, put a little less pressure on Okoro to produce in, you know, fewer minutes and reward a guy who's been consistently good for you the whole season. And, you know, Chetty is he's 26. You know, he's not old, you know, I feel like that this improvement that he has is sustainable and that there could be even a little bit more, you know, marginal improvements yet still for him. And, you know, it wouldn't harm. I don't think I get why they don't want to mess with success there, but I feel like the guy's kind of earned it. I don't know what you think, Eli, but
yeah, I mean, I really like how Chetty's been playing this year for sure, but I think the fear is once he plays a lot more, he's going to have to do more than be a catch and shoot. And, you know, he's not really doing any secondary playmaking anymore. And I think that's all by design.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So I think the more you play him, you kind of have to let him. He has to do more than just catch and shoot the whole game. So I think there's a fear that if he plays more, you know, his role might have to evolve. And that's when things can kind of go off the rails with him. From last year's.
I mean, I'm with you guys, but the other side of it is let's look at his per 36 numbers. They're through the roof. I mean, advanced his VORP versus last year, 0.6 versus negative 0.3 last year. As box plus minus is 3.7 versus negative 2.8. I believe he is the biggest box plus minus mover in the NBA this year. Like,
that is correct. Chetty for most improved is to me.
Yeah.
You went from negative 3 to positive 3.5, I believe.
Like, it's just ridiculous. And yeah, so let's go look at assists per 36 minutes. His assists are way down, and it speaks to, you know, what you talked about last year, 4.1 assists, but this year, 2.8, they're asking him to do less and very much focus on the role of put the ball in the GD basket. 18.5 points per 36 minutes. And, you know, his offensive rating is 117 versus defensive rating of 106. And, he's averaging 25.5 points per 100 possessions. Like, and okay, I got to scroll down in the basketball reference here. What is his true shooting? If I can find the damn stat. His true shooting is 615. Like, that is elite. Like, how do you not play that guy a little bit more? Like, come on. What's he at right now? Is he at, now I got to find out, and I don't understand how averages work, so somebody bear with me and do something while I'm talking here. Per game!
I totally hear you.
22.3. Come on. How do you not give that guy five more minutes a game? Come on.
I'm on board with you, Nate. I feel like the man's earned it. I mean, like,
yeah,
it's a real meritocracy in the NBA, and the dude is just bawling his brains out. Yeah. So, you know, I feel like he's earned it. He's earned it. He's earned the right to, you know, I think he earned, I feel like you can cut down Okoro's minutes just a touch and put Chetty in. For instance, with the game tonight,
I feel like
Chetty looked pretty good.
Rubio's and Garland's numbers a bit. you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and one of the impressive things tonight was Chetty's defense on Zach LaVine. Challenged him pretty good. His length seemed to bother him, you know.
Funneled him to the help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it was they ran a clinic on Zach LaVine today. It was super fun. And a little bit, I feel like, you know, JB might, especially on a week like this, JB might want to, you know, cut the minutes down and expand the rotation a little bit. I think Dean Wade showed tonight that he deserves some minutes, you know, 3 or 4 from three in the last 5 minutes of garbage time. Like,
I feel like that was a message sent to JB, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like, come on, JB. Yeah, that was an I feel you dog moment. So, so yeah, and with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Kaz the Podcast. What were you going to say, Chris? I cut you off right before you were going to say something.
This is just for posterity because Nate requested, but Dean Wade did get robbed of a three at the end of the game because of the shot clock violation, which I don't know about the shot. It seemed like the clock started a little quick, but he had his 4-3 hit if they would have counted it. So just shout out to Dean Wade. You're my boy. So I saw it. I saw you on a heater.
On a heater. That's like the thing this year. Everybody's on a heater. I like
that's
it.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. Right. Riding the buffalo, feeling the flow, doing the happy dance. You know what I'm saying? And so you got a question for me and Eli, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So to me, the question that we have that is on the minds of seemingly a lot of Cavs fans recently, and also it's the time of the year. We're in December now, almost mid-December. And that question is, the Cavs are a top 8 team by luck-adjusted differential. They are looking like they're on the precipice of being one of the top contenders in the NBA this season. So the question is, do the Cavs make a move to put them over the edge and put them among the top contenders of the league? Do they make a move? Do they upset the apple cart? Do they do something because they've lost Young Bull, Colin Sexton for the year? I want to hear your thoughts, guys. Eli, what you think?
Wait. Before you go to Eli, we gotta have a moment of silence. Because Eli was in a text to us. You know, dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to not bury the Ben Simmons to the Cavs trade idea. We have come to praise its name. Come on. No, it's not true. The Ben Simmons. Eli is off the train. He's a foreigner officially. Ben Simmons to the Cavs is no longer a good idea. Am I right, Eli?
You're right. I have come to my realization, and I'm ready to close that dark chapter of my life.
Here I go. Turn the page.
Yeah. So, I am officially off the trade for Ben Simmons bandwagon. That dream is now no longer anything I want anything to deal with.
And to be honest, like, we're all thrilled with that, right? Like,
oh yeah,
because sure. The Cavs are playing so well, that is why that dream is dead, right?
Oh yeah, and you know, I will also say this. I was very critical of the organization getting rid of KPJ. I think in hindsight we can look at that and see that as not as devastating as a move. Now that we have almost the full year of results, so I am not going to bring up the Ben Simmons hypothetical trade to the Cavs going forward. That train has station, and in hindsight I should have never wanted to even be on that train, so I'm ready to
let that out. To be fair, the man driving that train, the engineers of that train were Daryl Morey and Rich Paul. Those are some sketchy engineers. Come on.
That is true. So, but to back to the main question that prompted all this, including, you know, missing trains and whatnot, I actually am on the fence here. I think the Cavs should make a move. I don't think it has to be a go all in for, you know, an all-star type of move, but I do want to see the Cavs make a move. And one move that I think is still on the table that could happen, and honestly, I think it should happen, is James Ennis. He's on the street.
I didn't expect that at all.
And it would cost the Cavs a minimum salary because they do currently have 15 players. So
they would have to cut either probably Ed Davis or...
It'd be Ed Davis or Valentine, I would guess. Because I think they'd have to keep Valentine. Pangos because they have him to a two-year deal. And Valentine's deal for next year is not guaranteed. So it'd probably be Ed Davis.
I don't think his deal for this year is guaranteed.
Yeah, it might not be, actually. But that's actually one move I think is really low-hanging fruit. Obviously, to counter that, maybe there is a reason James Ennis hasn't been picked up by anybody at this point. Maybe he has a lingering injury or he just doesn't want to play unless it's like a contending situation. But that's definitely a move I'd be interested in. And then in terms of a trade, unless they're getting some smoking deal that doesn't make sense for the other team, which rarely happens in today's NBA because no GM wants to be the big loser. I think a trade for like a slight reclamation project, maybe like a Derek White, could make sense. Caris LeVert is a name that has been popping up a lot because of the report that the Pacers might be looking to trade their whole core away. And even Chris Fedor tweeted out that the Cavs could be a strong suitor for him. But looking at how our team, how the Cavs' salary structure is, I don't see a way the Cavs can make that deal unless they give up Rubio, which I'm totally against. And I think I tweeted this too. The easiest one is giving Rubio up straight up, which is definitely not going to happen.
Yeah, that's really tough to me. Yeah,
Osman and Okoro.
Remember how last year how Osman seemed overpaid, and now he seems underpaid?
Yeah, and Osman Okoro, which I also don't think I would do. And then maybe the alternative is you aggregate like Okoro, Windler, Dean Wade, and Lamar Stevens. I mean, that's like pretty much the three pathways, unless they do some janky stuff with a third team. Or a four-team deal where they give a bunch of assets to get other things as well. But I just don't really see a good pathway for LeVert. And, you know, to be honest, he doesn't have the best health track record, which could be devastating when you go for a trade of that magnitude of salary. So besides that, like, the Cavs should only be really looking at fringe types of deals, I think, on the margins. Because why mess this up? I mean, this team is playing really well. They're playing for each other. And, you know, if you do want to look at a trade, you have to, I think the focus should be on this team for now and look at a deal in the offseason when you still have some big questions, like with Colin Sexton's restricted free or his free agency. And, you know, you got to extend Garland. You're probably going to have to pay him something big. So, you know, you're going to cap yourself back out. But right now, I just don't see any big moves that the Cavs can make that I would really, you know, think is a home run at this point.
I mean, to me, it's really about, you know, one of the things is we're probably 3 weeks away. Like, I think, or maybe even 2 weeks away. And I think these teams that are at the bottom, you know, the first big domino to fall in the NBA every year is when teams that were acquired in the offseason can be traded. I'm not sure when that is right now because I had a couple of adult beverages.
It's next week, actually. December 15th.
Okay. But yeah, so we're a week away from that. So I feel like it kind of depends on, you know, if Indy wins a couple games, maybe they, you know, make that move. And a lot of these teams are kind of right on the edge. You know, I put a big thing the last time we had this podcast, Derek White and Doug McDermott, I thought would be a really great fit. Well, in the interim, the Spurs won some games, you know, but they're still in 12th place, you know, 4-6. Well, I guess they've lost two since then. So it's like, you know, there's a place you look and say, hey, if you're the Spurs and you can get a couple draft picks and give up a Derek White and a Doug McDermott, who, you know, may not necessarily be long-term fits for you, for a Kevin Love, that kind of makes some sense. If you are the Indiana Pacers right now, it's not looking that great for you. You're 11-16. I think a guy that would fit phenomenally for the Cavs is Malcolm Brogdon, who could definitely slide into that, you know, I would give up a Ricky Rubio for a Malcolm Brogdon. I'll be honest.
Unfortunately, you can't trade for Brogdon this year, though, because he signed an extension.
Why are you such an a-hole,
Eli? I'm just saying, I would trade a lot for Malcolm Brogdon, too, but unfortunately.
Yeah, whatever, you jerk. I wonder if he was pooping my oatmeal some more. Yeah, there's Caris LeVert. There's Gary Harris. I don't think Gary Harris makes sense for the Cavs. You know, I threw out the idea of my boy Sato, Satoransky from
New Orleans, right?
New Orleans, yeah. The New Orleans Fatties. Yeah, like Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, like together they make the number 10. So I'm the worst. I'm sorry. I would love Josh Hart. Josh Hart, I think, would be fantastic from that team. Like, I would go hard after that guy. That he would be so perfect at as a starting two for the Cavs. I mean, is anybody disagree with me there with the numbers he's putting up this year in terms of rebounds and, you know, decent shooting and defense?
No, I mean, I really like Josh Hart, and I'm kind of wondering if you like a Josh Hart, and you'd get Josh Hart and Satoransky.
But if you did that, you'd have to give up Love.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue. You'd have to give up Love and probably a pick. So.
Oh, no, you'd have to give up maybe two picks, honestly, for Josh Hart. And I might do that if they're, you know, depending on the protections around those. So the other side of that is kind of what happens with Portland. Do we bring our boy home? Do we bring the pride of Stark County back to Cleveland if Portland keeps losing? And by that, I mean CJ McCollum. Like, if you could give up a Kevin Love and get, you know, and maybe a couple first-round draft picks for a CJ McCollum if Portland just totally implodes that whole situation, do you do that, Eli?
I would really consider it. You know, just it's unfortunate that his, like, he had a lung collapse this week. So that's.
Oh, my God, right? What the heck happened there?
Yeah. So it's just tough because I think McCollum is.
No, seriously. Do you know what the heck happened? Was it a game thing?
No, I think it's like a.
He just woke up in his lung collapse? What?
Apparently it
no, it doesn't. Yeah. I think it's that whole wine thing he's into. That wine shit is weird and will mess you up.
But I don't know, man. I like McCollum, and I think he shoots enough threes to make the fit work with basically any NBA team, and the Cavs now have enough defensive, you know,
The Cavs 1-3 makes enough sense that you could have a guy like CJ McCollum as your starting two. And honestly, yeah. I feel like you could ship Colin Sexton out in that deal because, you know, that team would probably be willing to wait on Colin Sexton, you know, either pay him the qualifying offer or, you know, kind of figure out how that whole situation is going to work. But I feel like Colin Sexton could be part of that trade too if they blow that team up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I like that idea, the McCollum idea. I mean, especially if you're getting off the Love contract, I think it makes a lot of sense.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'd love to get McCollum and get Larry Nance back, but that ain't happening. Poor Larry Nance. Like, I feel like he definitely did not make a great decision asking for a trade. Like, when the Cavs drafted Evan Mobley, he should have been like, yes, please. You know, but whatever. I mean, he's kind of getting scraps out. And I mean, he's fighting for time with a freaking Zeller brother. Come on. Like, what is that? Like, God. And at least Neil O'Shea is out for that team. Anyway, I just feel bad.
Rest in peace. Yeah, absolutely. Rest in piss, Bozo. Yeah.
And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. Second hour. You know, we're trending a little more mellow now, but Chris, there was a joke I was supposed to make. What was the joke, Eli?
Chris, you asked the question. So
Oh yeah. And Eli says that because Eli is kind of the new acting managing editor of Cavs the Blog, at least for, you know, at least until I get back on my feet again. I've been dealt a blow personally, so I'm turning over the reins of the blog to a very capable hands, Elijah Kim. Yeah, Chris, listen to the boss.
Oh man, well, you know, to the question. The reason why I thought of it and what it reminds me of is, and what kind of precipitated the thoughts is about going all in this season, is that look at what happened to the Celtics about 3-4 years ago. You know, Tatum is popping off, Jaylen Brown's popping off, they have Rozier, they had Gordon Hayward. They had this core. They made it to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cavs. You know, they lost or whatever, but you know, they stood pat. You know, they stood pat with all their picks, all their guys, and look at where they are now. You know, they are a middling team, and there's now questions about, is Tatum going to stay? Is Brown going to get traded? You know, they are totally in the mud. And so it just, to me, and it's interesting listening to you guys talk, is that you guys make such compelling cases both ways, you know, with the McCollum deal or just standing pat. For me, you know, because what I was going to say coming into this discussion was that I want to make a move. I want to make a big move because I want to strike while the iron's hot. And we have Evan Mobley, who's a generational talent, and he's completely changed the complexion and trajectory of the team. We need to strike while the iron's hot and while the getting's good. But then, you know, listening to you guys talk, and I'm now starting to back away from that opinion and think, you know, the vibes are just so good right now with the team. This team is all pulling in the same direction. They're all on the same agenda that you guys have kind of convinced me, like, we should just let this ride out, you know, let this mother ride. And because the vibes are good, because, you know, we could trade Kevin Love, but I feel like Love will be an important piece if we're in the playoffs, you know, and we need to be good. You know, we need to have clutch play in pressure situations. He's been in the finals. He's won a championship. You know, he's He's won gold medals. You know, we need a guy like that if we're actually going to do any damage in the playoffs. You know, we have Rubio, who's been a leader for his national team and done great things for the Spanish national team. So, you know, just kind of listening to you guys, I've kind of like swung one way to the other, where I was at first, I was like, we got to make a move because I don't want to waste any minute that we have Mobley. To, you know, the vibes are so good and it's all about the team. So let's just ride this mother out. So I don't know how that strikes your guys' ears, but that's kind of where I'm at now, is you guys kind of convinced me that the vibes are too good to mess with.
I mean, let me take you back to a time, 2009, I believe, or maybe 2010, the Cavs traded one Zydrunas Ilgauskas for one lame ass MF-er named Anton Jameson, and his stupid little push shot from the free throw line that went off the back of the backboard every friggin' time, and the guy couldn't guard my mom on a trip to the COVID vaccine center. I mean, come on. And I still, to this day, say that was the worst GD trade I ever saw in my GD life, because it totally jacked the chemistry of the Cavs, even though Z came back like 60 days later when the Wizards bought him out, and he came back, and they literally made a frickin' rule, the Z rule, so that teams couldn't buy out players and they could return to the team that traded them in the first place. But it totally jacked the Cavs' chemistry. And I contend, you know, if you had a time machine and you went back and you made that trade differently, the Cavs' first championship might have been 2009 and not 2016. Ooh, wow. So, or 2010. I don't know. I can't remember. I got my dates all jacked up. But it's definitely, don't screw up chemistry. Like, this team is so fun, so good. Why would you mess it up? That being said, you could trade some guys at the bottom of the roster. You know, you got your Dean Wade's, you got your, you know, Lamar Stevens. You know, you can aggregate some salaries down at the bottom, but man, I don't know if you screw it up. You know, enjoy the ride. In the words of Dewey Cox, it's a beautiful ride. Eli, what do you got to say that?
No, I remember that trade, and at the time, I really liked Anton Jameson. So, you're bringing back nightmares, because Anton. I remember the first game after he got traded, and he played. He like literally did not make a field goal in the game.
Oh man!
And then I think his best, Anton Jameson's best moment was in the year after. It was 2010, Nate. You're right. So, was the year after where the Cavs were like lost 26 straight.
Oh, you're driving a stake into my heart, Eli. that was the least I watched the Cavs ever. The frickin' Byron Scott shitaliers.
But then they played the Clippers with Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and they won their game against the Clippers. And I remember Anton Jameson at the postgame press conference said it felt like winning a championship. And I like lost my mind.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god.
But
anyway. Oh my god, that was brutal, Eli. That was brutal. Why don't you just pull my gallbladder out and just beat it against my face? Oh my god.
But in all seriousness, and back to the present day, I think they should just do the James Ennis move. And I think that's it. That's all they got to do. Unless Greg Popovich is like, you know what? I'm just going to win my games to be the all-time winningest coach, and I'll give the Jun.
And get the fuck out! Sorry, did I just drop an F-bomb? I guess I did.
It's
no, I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah, I mean, you think Becky Hammond is coaching that team next year?
Oof. I think Popovich only needs to win like 26 games to get the all-time record. So
26 more?
No.
Or 26 total.
26 total, I believe. But
and then he's like, peace out.
Yeah.
I think that probably happens, and then he becomes like a senior consultant for that team. But who knows? I don't know. I don't know.
He only needs 26 total wins.
Like, I love Pop. And honestly, I think that team, like, DeJounte Murray looks incredible this year. Like, that guy is ridiculous. Derek White's all over the place. Part of the reason I think he would fit with the Cavs is because they could actually get him. But, and I actually think the guy they drafted, his name, he's super young.
Josh Primo
looks fantastic, and looks like he could be a really good player in the future. And, you know, they've got a lot of decent young players. They're just super young. They honestly remind me of the Cavs, like, from a year or two earlier, except with a hell of a lot more wing depth. It's just, you know, youth is a freaking killer in the NBA. So, I mean, I don't know. I feel like he could just come back next year and win 50 games with a new team, or Becky Hammond could be coaching that team. I honestly think he kind of wanted to turn the reins over to Becky Hammond. And I feel like, and then just become a senior consultant for the team. So I don't know. I mean, I love Pop. You know, I live by the creed of WWPD. What would Pop do? I don't know what's going to happen with that team, but, you know, Derek White is on a 4-year guaranteed contract. It's hard to trade a guy like that just because it's like, well, if you're good next year, you really wish you'd had that guy. I don't know. I don't know what happens with that team. I'm just babbling now. I don't know what I'm saying. Somebody step in because I'm just, I don't know. Chris, what? Okay. So we talked about this when we were planning this segment. Give me one thing that's going on in the NBA right now that is surprising you, and one thing that you're like, ha ha.
Well, the one thing that is surprising me that's a great question. What's the one thing that's surprising me? I guess it's the Knicks, I would say, being total dog crap. Really kind of did. I thought they, you know, had some good mojo from last year, and I expected them to, you know, hang in and be in the mix, and they look bad. And there's already now, they're starting to take shots at New York. The fickle New York media and fans are now turning against Tibbs. So what a difference 6 months makes. So that'd be the surprising thing, I would say, for me. It wouldn't surprise some of the more doomer Knicks fans, but it does surprise me.
So the thing I told your surprise or your ha-ha?
I guess it could work for both. No, the ha-ha is definitely Jalen Green. What a scrub. Oh, my God. I mean, I'm sick of hearing, like, there's a little joke and I'm an old curmudgeon, and there's a little joke in my NBA chat circle about, you know, buckets and problems and stuff like that. They were all in on Jalen Green, this, that, and the other thing. Well, guess what? He freaking stinks. He stinks to high heaven. And Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I don't know if you've seen the stats, but basically the Houston Rockets went on a 6-game winning streak, I think, or something like that, after he got taken out of the rotation or whatever. They're like 26 points better per 100 possessions without him. And on top of that, apparently KPJ also stinks, and the team has totally turned their performance around. They beat the Nets tonight without either of them. So, you know, learn the game. The game is about not just buckets. It's about preventing buckets too. So Evan Mobley for the win. Suck it, Houston fans. And Tillman for Titta.
Tillman for Shitta is undefeated. What about you, Eli?
Well, what about you, ironically, Eli? Chris's haha is my surprise, which is the Rockets. You know, they won 7 straight, and they beat the crap out of the Nets despite James Harden getting his, like, 15 free throws in Houston like he's used to. So,
okay, so they're letting go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying they're letting the Rat King go now.
Who's the Rat King? Sorry.
Oh, the Rat King is definitely Trae Young or James Harden, take your pick. Jimmy Harden, take your pick.
Oh,
they're the Rat Kings.
Like, I almost feel like James Harden is like almost yesterday's news at this point. Like, he feels totally exposed to me as an NBA star. Like, whereas Trey is still doing a lot of really good stuff with his passing and shooting.
That's fair.
I mean, he's still a douche, and he's still, like, that team is still annoying to watch, but he's still doing a ton with passing, and it helps that he has a lot of really athletic guys around him, like, you know, your boy, Juice Collins, Eli.
Yep. The Juice Man.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a very interesting NBA season so far. I feel like the East is wide open. Do you guys feel the same way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's wide open and the best it's, like, ever been in recent history, I feel like.
Yeah, and even, like, you know, Miami was super good for a while. We had Milwaukee. I feel like Milwaukee is still the best team in the East, especially as they get healthy. And good gravy did Giannis look like Jordan and Dr. J had a kid the other day when I was watching the Cavs play him. I mean, I was just like, when he's coming down and just launching, just like pull up FU threes, I was like, holy crap, that cat is as the Twitter folks say, a balla, you know, or no, sorry, rather, he is a hooper. He's a hooper. Yeah, not a basketball player. He's a hooper. So, I mean, at that guy, oh my God, he's so good. And I love the dude. Like, he is a hard guy to root against. Am I wrong? Like, he just plays his ass off all the time and loves the city that drafted him, loves his teammates. Like, freaking, he gets to play with two of his brothers. How great is that? I mean, I have a hard time even getting mad at Giannis when the Cavs lose to him, except that the refs never call GD travel on him. But, I mean, he's so much fun, and he clearly worked his butt off. You know, that guy is generational, you know, and that's what I hope the Cavs are getting in Evan Mobley. I don't know. I'm just babbling at this point. What's my surprise? Oh, man, I got to get into it here. My surprise... I did not think the Warriors were this good. Like,
that's a good one.
I mean, the other side of it is, F you for tanking for the last 2 years, you douches. Come on. Like, we all know they tanked for the last 2 years, and they got a bunch of draft picks. I'm not glad, because I don't root against anybody, but James Wiseman, ha-ha! I mean, that guy is no freaking good, yet they still got enough freaking ammunition and enough powder in the chamber to go pull a trigger for another trade for a pretty decent dude. They are tied for the best record in the NBA with the Suns, who, come on, let's be honest, guys. You guys watch the Suns and the Cavs games. That was the biggest officiating load of garbage I've ever seen in my life. Do you guys disagree? I've never seen a worse officiated NBA game.
No, speaking of that game, I have a hilarious story. about that game.
Do tell, Elijah.
So, Kim. I think I told you guys this. So I went to that game because it was the day before Thanksgiving. Me and a bunch of buddies went, and the game was so frustrating that I looked up what the referee's name was. And I started yelling at him.
Oh yeah, okay. I didn't realize. Okay, you were at that game. What was his name?
It was
Mehta.
Yeah, Suyash Mehta. And yeah. I found this article on the NBA official referee thing website that talked about how, and it was a quote. He said, like, oh, I didn't follow my father's footsteps, who was a doctor. And, you know, he immigrated to the U.S.
I already know where this is going. And okay, it's like an Aziz Ansari. What was the Aziz Ansari show on Netflix?
Parks and Rec.
No, on the one on Netflix. Okay, well, just keep going with your story because
No worries. So as like my seats were pretty good, so like they could definitely hear us, right? Like the refs could definitely hear us, and there was this point in the game where Rubio gets a rebound, he doesn't dribble the ball. And they're about, and then they call timeout to advance the ball, obviously. And Suyash.
Oh my God, I remember that. Yeah. And the show
pointed at under the Cavs basket, saying that they're going to have to go from there because he advanced the ball.
Which he did not at all.
And you could hear Rubio literally yelling, like, I didn't effing dribble the ball. And.
His name is not Rubio. His name is our Lord and Savior, your Jesus Rubio. Yeah. Anyway, keep going.
So at this point, everyone's really mad. They're booing the refs at like every point of the game. And I yell, hey, ref, it sucks that you're nowhere near your father. And on top of that, you're blind. I'm like the meanest person in the world. And I was... To be fair, I was sitting kind of far, but like still, you know, within distance of seeing him.
So are these the same seats that you hooked me up with, Eli?
I think they're a little bit closer to the action.
Wow. Okay. Because yeah, the ones like me and David had were pretty good. So
yeah. So because it was Thanksgiving, I think I got like a upgrade to the back.
Nice.
So basically that happens, obviously the Cavs lose, and then the worst part is he has to like walk through the tunnel right in front of me to leave, because that's where the referees come out. And me and my friends, like, I mean, this is like not a nice thing to do, but we were just telling him, like,
I'm shocked.
Disappointed in you, you're like, you couldn't even be a doctor, like, we're just yelling all the time.
Oh my God.
And
like we are questioning this man's life choices.
And, to top it all off, I like sarcastically found his like Instagram, and I sarcastically DM'd him and said, because I was so mad at this point, and I, you know, I might have been a little intoxicated, but I DM'd him and I posed as a Suns fan, and I said, I bet people just look at your Instagram to spill hate and vitriol about the call you missed. But I just want to thank you for giving my sons the victory in Cleveland this evening. And he literally, he never responded to it, but he blocked me. So that means he saw the message and decided, like, I'm not dealing with this guy. So he blocked me. And that's my story.
Did that make your week, Eli?
What's that?
Did that make your week?
No, because in the end, I felt bad that I said he was not half the man his father was. So
I'm half the man I used to be.
Yeah. So, but you know, at the end of the day, it was a frustrating game. It brings the worst and the best emotions, but it was not a fun drive home after watching the refs.
Oh my God. How bad did they hose Darius Garland that game? Like, he literally had three absolute phantom fouls. Like, they were just not fouls, and they called him against him.
And to add insult to injury, JB had a challenge one, and then that one still
stayed. And that one was garbage.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Against our friend, our former Cavalier, toe-on-the-line Crowder. God. Three-point line Crowder. That game was so frustrating. After that game, I was like, well, if this is the way every game they're playing is officiated, no wonder they got this streak. How about Ben Wirth's article last Friday just talking about taking away, Chris Paul's right-hand snake dribble and, just how bad the refs are still kind of hosing Darius Garland. We saw it tonight. He crowded, who did he crowd at the end of that game and he got called for a foul? Or LaVine. I think it was LaVine in the third quarter. And basically LaVine pump faked. Garland closed the space, hands straight up. LaVine jumped into him and it was like, oh, we're going to give you a call. And JB was like, yeah, F that noise. It was super frustrating.
Yeah, and then it was a weird ruling because they didn't give him three shots. They said the foul was on the floor because the time expired. So he took two shots.
Yeah, it was so goofy. Weird. Oh, well, and we want to talk about officiating. What was the game where they literally took three Cavs threes off the board?
That was the Suns game.
Was it? Yeah, that was the same game. They literally took three Cavs threes off the board. Like, what are we doing out here? Yeah, that was one of the worst officiated games I've ever seen. But,
whatever. The worst part is, because this made my blood boil so much, I looked up the last two-minute report for the game because there was one call where Crowder acted like he got hit in the face.
Oh, my God!
Every replay showed that it did not happen.
Yeah.
And on the last 2-minute report, they put videos of every foul that they called correctly or not correctly. They ruled that foul correctly called, and then when you literally click the video that's right under that, you literally see him not touch the guy's face at all. And I'm like, oh, even the 2-minute report's all effed up. Like, no one's even looking at this.
Yeah. Oh, it was garbage. Yeah, it was. It was like he should have got a fine for flopping, right? Like Chris Paul should every other GD game, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it was egregious how missed a call that was.
Egregious. Worded the evening for me. I used the word egregious in several discussions, in several contexts before this podcast. So, yeah. And the Cavs are an egregiously awesome team. So, super fun. I've been enjoying the crap out of them. Okay, real quick, let's wrap this bad boy up. Chris Francis, give me your pitches for this week. What is something everyone should check out this week?
I'm going to have to say the Matrix movie looks pretty damn good. So ooh, I'm going to pitch that.
Okay.
I'm always a fan of the Matrix. I'm a fan of the trilogy. So
I'm a fan of the first one. Actually, I like the second one. I thought the third one was a big flaming pile of poo, but I do like me some Matrix. And Keanu is a mensch, so
that's right.
I dig the dude, so I can totally get behind Keanu. Yeah, when's that come out?
It comes out the 22nd, I think. So just before Christmas. So
there's a lot of good movies coming out, man.
Yeah,
we got Spider-Man. We got The Matrix. What else is coming out? I know there's other stuff coming out.
Yeah, I mean, those were the two big ones for sure.
What about you, Eli? You got anything to pick?
Yeah, I actually got it's a weird thing. It's called an anti-pitch, which is whatever you do.
Stay away from.
Don't do it.
The referee meta.
Well, like I said, I do feel kind of bad for calling him out on not living up to his father's footsteps. But that aside.
Jesus, Eli.
The third time it was mentioned.
Eli was some inception shit going on.
that aside, my anti-pitch is actually the new Call of Duty game.
Ooh.
They have made this game almost unenjoyable and unplayable at this point. And it is so frustrating because it used to be something I enjoyed. It was something that me and a bunch of friends were able to connect with and spend time, you know, catching up over. But now they've released this new version. Instead of going into the future with more like realistic guns and stuff, we're actually going back to World War II. It's just not a very well thought out method. And it frankly just annoys me. I don't know what I'm going to do instead now, because I can't enjoy my time playing that game with my buddies. So that's my anti-pitch.
Get their asses, Eli.
Damn, Eli. Damn, just Eli with a rant of the day. I don't know what I got to pitch this week. I am going to pitch being kind to people, being respectful of people. I've had a blow in the last week and a half, and I've been just unbelievably overwhelmed by the people that have... I feel like I try to treat people with kindness and respect and support, and I've been super just touched by the people that have returned that to me as I've been experiencing tough times. And I just want to say thank you to everybody that present company very certainly included that has supported me and, you know, been my friend and, you know, just been awesome people that I like to surround myself with. So thank you. And also, I'm going to pitch Market Garden Festivus Holiday Ale, which is the official beer of saying, I love you, man, at 93 minutes into a podcast. So, yeah, that's what I'm pitching. So, and as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers.